Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael. How you be?
I'm great. How are you?
Excellent. Just had another just outrageously fun day getting FAZC all ready for visitors.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can't wait to be there.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Can't wait to have you here.
Yes, yes. Fabulous, fabulous. What a blessing for Sangha.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 Can't wait. Yeah, it's been so long, you know, since we've been together. I just can't wait to see everybody.
Yeah. Yes. Wonderful. And I have an announcement here to start us off.
All right.
Distraction, control, feeling bad, and comparison. Some of egocentric karmic conditioning self-hate's favorite bamboozles. Join Sangha for 4 Sunday workshops in June to explore how ego uses these tactics to keep us in suffering. The workshop series begins this Sunday, June 4th, and is offered on a donation basis. And for these say that again,
Sarah. That sounds like fun. Distraction, control, feeling bad, and what?
Comparison.
Comparison, yeah. Few of ego's favorite things, huh?
Yeah. Chuckling internally as I was reading this.
Check that one.
Yep. Today, probably, yep. Check.
Yep. Uh-huh.
Wonderful. And a few reminders for tonight. If you'd like to get in the queue to talk with Sherry, please press *6 and then 1 to make cash show. And a conversation on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes is great. All right. Without further ado, Sherry, I think we're ready.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome. First caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, this is Brad in Maryland.
Hey, Brad.
Hey, Sherry.
What's going on?
Well, I just got back from the West Coast, and
Wait a darn minute.
Sure.
You must have been way south of us, right?
I was in Los Angeles because I'm gonna.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Okay. All right. That's not exactly on the way. Okay. All right. You're forgiven.
Right.
Okay. Go ahead.
So, I've been going through a lot trying to get out of ego's comfort zone post-divorce, and there's been a lot of really trying to get past ego quickly. Then a little bit of a regression on this trip. Coming back, and then today I notice just depression as kind of the next thing that tries to get my attention.
Mm-hmm.
And what helped per some advice I was given is, you know, keeping those earbuds in all day long, dealing with only having my attention be on the mentor and being on the present moment. Because, you know, realizing I am just so heavily conditioned to go towards that other stuff, you know, and that other stuff also tells me that, you know, obviously I'm the center of the universe. I'm the only one that feels this bad, and why can't I get over it? So anyway, I just wanted
to mention
this thing.
You know, as a person familiar with depression, I wonder what it's like. So I'll just tell you something that I have found helpful. And that is when that starts. So, you know, we do the first there's movement, then there's sensation, there's a thought about it, an emotional reaction, and a behavior, right? And we can see that, right? So if we're feeling depressed, that's usually the feeling the sensation of it is often kind of a heaviness or a, yeah.
It feels like that. And then as well, it takes my energy.
Yes, yes.
It plugs in and takes my energy.
Exactly. So you don't have any energy. And so those are the sensations. And immediately the label comes up, it's depression. But really, all that's going on is I don't have a lot of it. Yeah, so I love that, Brad. You're the only other person that I'm sure there may have been others, but usually people don't have that experience with depression. You know, the focus is on the thoughts. There isn't the I don't have any energy. And that was mine. I didn't particularly have sad thoughts or unhappy thoughts or that sort of thing. I just couldn't get out of the chair.
Well, I have that. But, I mean, in other words, it's like once the thoughts are indulged, then the energy goes. So
Yes. And it's hard to tell which is which, right? Because, because it's just this whole ball. So then we try to get out of it, right? So there, when we talk about there's a conditioned behavior that goes with it, with something like depression, anything, anxiety or fear or, you know, any of the biggies.
I've been through those lately, too.
So with any of them, there are lots of conditioned behaviors, right? We have a whole menu of things that could happen as a result of this, you know what those are as well as I do. So if we step back and look at that whole package, right, this mm-hmm. is going on and this is good in the way I just laid it out, right? So what's going on with my energy? Well, I don't have any energy. It's hard. It's heavy. I don't have the strength to do anything. I can't do this. I can't do this. So there's this feels awful. I don't want to feel this way. My life is impossible. I can't. So, you step back and see the whole package. You can realize that it is. It's a whole thing that gets the label depression. But there are really, it's like we have a thing called a house. But, what is a house? When we start looking at it, there isn't actually anything that's a house. A house is just a word that we have when all these things are put together. And depression is the same way. So if I stick with the label depression, then it means all of those things, right? Right? Yeah. In the same way, it's a house, right? But if I start looking at doors and windows and floors and roofs and ceilings and that sort of thing, then it's a different relationship. What is the problem with it? And it becomes much more manageable because it's broken down into component pieces.
Well, I'm aware that there is a tipping point in terms of dealing with it, whereas if I have my attention completely focused in on it, that's when the plug goes into the ego or whatever else, and then my energy's gone. But today, for example, it was a different experience just through turning my attention, realizing it's there, and turning my attention back to the present moment, not indulging it nor denying it.
That's right. Yes. Oh, that's so perfect. Because if you give it all of your attention, it becomes your whole world, right?
Yeah, there goes the energy, exactly. And by that point, then I am cooked for the day, just...
Well, no, you're not. Of course you're not. Don't be silly. Okay, so what's required, though, it is... So once you get to that point, it's really hard to redirect the attention, right?
Yeah.
But we were having a conversation on the morning show sometime recently, where once you find yourself in that place, then what you want to do is use that as your best opportunity to dissect it, Okay, so what is it? What is happening exactly? And we're not talking about just throwing labels around. You know, well, I don't have any energy, right? Well, what does that mean? Can I wiggle my toes? What about my eyebrows? Okay, well, what else can I, lift my arm? Can I, okay? Now, if you start down that track, I can promise you, in a very short period of time, you're going to realize you have energy. Now, if you go back to, well, but how about, you know, fixing dinner for the kids? Oh, God, no, I don't have the energy for that. Well, no, but you've just gone to the house thing, right? So what's fixing dinner? Can I open the refrigerator? Yeah, okay, yeah, seem to be able to. All right, can I get a pan out? Yeah, yeah. And it's breaking it down in that way and staying with it step by step by step. Okay. Now, if you're not doing something like that, then, you know, you're toast for the day. Okay, well, turn on some music and start dancing.
Ah.
Okay, because it's not that you don't have energy. You've got plenty of energy. It's just being depressed. And the way it's being depressed is through having attention on what's wrong and what's missing.
That is why I found exercise has been so helpful.
That's it. That's it. Exactly. And it's not actually the exercise. It's that you're redirecting your attention.
Ah.
Now, it is true that when you start to move, it releases the energy that ego is able to block up in your body.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is absolutely true. But the main difference is redirecting the attention. So that my best encouragement, Brad, is really look forward to the next time this happens to you. Really look forward to it. And so that you can do these experiments. So that you can break it down in that way, you can dissect it, take it apart, see what all the components are, realize that in and of themselves they don't mean anything. It's just that when we believe what is said, they mean when they're all put together and we go to a place of fear because it seems like it's big and bigger than we are and overwhelming. Okay, so start taking it apart, taking it apart, taking it apart, taking it apart.
Yeah, I will do that. I just wanted to say one other quick thing. This has been my whole life. I've realized that when I feel down, that there is some illusion that ego provides that through feeling that way will somehow change it. And that obviously is delusional. But that, ever since I was a kid, has been kind of the impetus for feeling that way. And the mentor's telling me today, you know, there's no prerequisite that you feel any particular way, but you don't have to feel bad about anything, you know.
That's right. That's right. Again, on the call this morning, there was a little exploration of that. How when we're kids, we're taught that feeling bad is the way to be a good person.
Oh, boy.
That being punished is what makes you good. Otherwise, you'll be bad, right? And it's just, you know, it's just hogwash. I mean, it's
just
perpetrated by people who didn't know any better. And also, it is a handy way to control children. Right? But once we realize, number one, I'm not a child, and it doesn't work, and it's not true. So if I want to feel something, I need to choose what I want to feel, and then I feel that.
Okay, wow.
Right? So if I want to feel good, I decide I want to feel good. All right, well then, what makes me feel good? Now you know what makes you feel good, right? You could give me a list of things that make you feel good, and so you do that. You know, you go outside, you get on your bicycle, and you you know, go for a ride, or you dance, or whatever the heck you do, right? You engage in some sort of hobby that you like, or you read something that you enjoy, or whatever it is that makes you feel good. It's not the whatever that is. It's turning your attention to a choice to feel good.
That's really helpful, yeah. It's not the content, it's the process.
That's it. That's it. You got it.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate
it. You are so welcome. All right. Go happy.
Will do. Bye-bye.
All right.
Thanks for joining us, Brad. And Sherry, I heard that on the morning show also, your encouragement to just explore like crazy the dark room and find every little piece of the suffering and how it all works. And I know for myself, I have a content that's been very sticky forever, and so it's a great recipe to continue going after that and just paying attention, not trying to solve the content, which has been the primary motivation, but just to see how it all works.
That's exactly right. So it's something like feeling bad is really, that's so huge. That's so amorphous. What does it even mean? Feeling bad. And so, well, how does a person feel bad? What is that? And, just starting out with those questions, we realize, it's really difficult to do. If we're not paying attention and it just, in quotes, happens to us, that's one thing. But when you try to pursue it, you just can't make it work. It can become quite frustrating, right? Wait a minute, I'm trying to feel bad here.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fabulous. The more you look for it, the more it disappears.
It just fades away. Yeah, goes up in smoke.
Great. And we have another caller here.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Rico in sunny San Rafael.
Oh, Rico in sunny San Rafael.
It's been really foggy. It's been really, really foggy here, so they have
So you're really celebrating the sun.
Yeah, I am. I'm also celebrating standing on my own 2 feet and not being dead yet.
Yeah, well, that's always a thing to celebrate.
I know, but really, it's
we don't want to miss that, right? Because whether a person is a bit long in the tooth, as say you and I are, or they're quite young and spry, there's no guarantee that we're going to see tomorrow, right? And so to celebrate I'm alive. I'm standing up. I can walk around.
In fact, every night when I shut off the lights and I get into bed, I say, well, it's been a great go. And if I go tonight, no regrets and what a ride.
Mm-hmm.
It's really
And you want to be there for it, right?
Exactly. So, and so when I wake up, I say, whoa, another day. And the first thing that comes to mind is, oh, boy, another day to learn to love more and more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really, it's true. I mean, it's like, so speaking of going to bed, I've got an old man bladder in one of the 18 trips to the bathroom every night. It happened last night where I was struck by an event that happened to my family, I don't know, maybe 15 years ago. And I don't know if the content is important or not, but I was there standing up in the dark, and I felt this contraction of anger and righteousness. I was so aware of the visceral contraction, maybe it's because, I didn't have any stimulus or anything, but, and then I felt, wow, that is how a prison of the mind is constructed, generated, and maintained.
Wow.
And you were
there for it.
I got to see the whole thing about tribalism and why hatred feels so good.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it makes me feel like I am someone. Now, it's also possible that this whole contraction and understanding, kind of, what do we call it? The compassionate comprehension of the whole cycle was that through, I don't know, a lifetime of sitting on a cushion, the whole ego structure gets a little wobbly and fuzzy and maybe wants to float away. And so this was like a rebound saying, no, I want to have an ego. I want to be something. I don't want to be nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And then
may I offer you another possibility?
Yes.
Okay. That what happens at, and you will immediately go with me on this, I predict, that after practicing for a long time, what begins to break down is the artificial barrier between what people think of as the unconscious and the conscious. That as you practice more, there's more acceptance for whatever to be there and be seen and to be accepted. So there you are in a place where you're not doing much of anything else, right? And there's an opening for that to come through and for you to have such clarity about something that in your waking, you know, fully full capacity daytime self, you probably would not be open to seeing that.
Could be. So that was followed by another practice opportunity where, so you're aware how I do this, do we call it a market, Sangha marketplace, where I construct these reproduction rowing craft. And so I have one that I finished, and I think it's my last one. I'm not healthy enough to make another one. It's too much. But anyway, so my helper said, let's put it on Facebook Marketplace to sell. And so I listed it, and it's been up there for a while. And I just received a message from, you know, thousands of people see this. And the message says, you are a traitor, the United States of America, and shame on you for feeding these in Africa with the proceeds of this boat. And
wow.
My first thought was, the Dalai Lama is called the Ocean of Compassion, and I almost started to cry for this person that lives in this world of hate.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that was just after my first cup of coffee, so I can't claim that to be in a dozy state.
No, but to me, you've just confirmed my theory. Okay? Because again, it's two sides of the same thing. Right? As you become more accepting, which goodness knows, you know, practice will do to us if we stick with it long enough, right? You are more accepting, just period. If it arises in you or it arises in someone else, you know, we have to put both of those in quotes, because there isn't a you that is other than a someone else. There's just an us. And so if it arises in human experience, in human consciousness, then there's acceptance for it. So if, with you to see, to have the ability to see for yourself right there, how this happens to people, right? The tribalism, the hatred, the closeness, all of that. And then not that long later, you get to experience the same thing in someone else, and there's the same acceptance because you know how that happens.
Yeah. Wow, Sherry. So here we are, a couple geezers, huh? Still at it.
Yeah.
So speaking of acceptance, I have an adult son, almost 52 years old, who's been under psychiatric care for 35 years. And he's a highly functional manic depressive. And mm-hmm. the older he gets, he seems to forget the unlimited love and compassion his parents have given to him. And mm-hmm. he's turned surly and abusive and difficult. And so mm-hmm. I was just reading the online book you folks sent us, The Gift of Dharma, about drawing a circle of acceptance. And I realize I couldn't have said this 3 years ago, but in my heart of hearts, I accept him as the perfect expression of who he is, and he is the perfect teacher for a father who loves him as any father could ever love a son.
Yeah.
Wow, thank you, my son. Thank you, my son. Thank you, my son. And on the other side of that is a young man, 35 years old, who calls me. I met this guy 10 or 11 years ago in the Whole Foods. He was a clerk. And he disappeared to take care of his mother, and about 4 months ago, he calls me and he says, "Well, yeah, I disappeared. I'm back. How can I help you?" Every Sunday, this guy says, "Can I come and help you?" And I find the temptation to compare this as the perfect son. Mm. And I said, I can't go there. Here, existence is giving me a young man who steps up where my biological son, well, even though my biological son lives closer than
can't.
This. Young man.
Yeah, we could say can't, right? More than won't.
Can't.
Yeah.
So anything, all I'm saying is I'm giving you a summary of our time together, and it's nothing like I ever, ever, ever could have imagined.
better
it's mm-hmm. like way better than the imagined the what I call the 9-to-5 mind could ever come up with. You know, we could be telling a campfire story to little kids, and this is way better than any story the mind could have created.
Yes absolutely. Yes.
I don't mean story, I mean
yes. Oh, I know exactly what you mean. I know exactly what you mean. That real life, being present to real life as real life is better than any imagination. The best that anybody could come up with pales in comparison to life as life actually is when we're here.
Yeah.
For it.
Yeah.
All right.
Well anyway,
work on your tan and enjoy it.
On my tan? No,
your tan.
No, I'm going to the hospital to get what is it called? The basal cell cancer. I can't be in the sun. So,
oh, wow.
But I appreciate the goodwill about the tan.
Yes.
But at least
wear a hat.
Dry out. Yeah, at least we can dry out the mold under our toenails.
Oh God! Thank you for that image, Rico. Thank you. Good night.
Good night, Sherry. Thank you for everything. Good night.
Take
Michael.
Care. Bye bye.
Blessings to everybody. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Rico. And Sherry, it's time now for Good News Update, and then we'll come back and talk with more callers.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. And Jen, I'm turning it over to you for a good news update.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
You're welcome.
And I'm pleased to be joined this afternoon by Deepa, who is here to talk with us about her experience of a gift of Dharma. Welcome, Deepa.
Thank you, Jen. Happy to be here.
It's so perfect, isn't it, that Rico set us up for this right at that the end
exactly.
of that conversation.
Yep, exactly so.
So I'll just give the little bit of background. A gift of Dharma is, it was sent out to Sangha, linked to a PDF recently, at this very minute. Oh, I think it was in the blog, wasn't it, in the About Swim. Yeah, I think that's where it the format that went out. So if people go to the website, they'd be able to find it probably under What's New. And so it was a link to a PDF version of a book that was given to Sherry on April 18th of this year. And it was a labor of love of many folks in the Sangha who wrote various vignettes about their own encounters with the guide and the way the Dharma has come through that for them, and photographs of places of practice, the beauty of that, and quotes, many, many quotes by Sherry Huber. And thank you for being with us today to talk about your experience of being with that book.
Thank you for asking me, Jen.
And so tell us a little bit about what that's been like for you to read it and to be with it and to have that experience.
I would love to. So what at first struck me was what a perfect offering this is for the guide. I'm sorry, I'm going to get emotional.
Perfectly allowed, Deepa.
Thank you. And so in sitting with that, just the appropriateness of it, the thoughtfulness of it, and the generosity of it, I went to this place of the joy of intelligence, knowing itself, that I delighted in something within Deepa resonating with the beauty that was being offered. So instead of going to a place of, so what comes very close at the heels of that is, oh my gosh, people are so thoughtful, you know, instead of that separation.
Got it.
Yeah. So that was my first sort of gasp moment when I encountered the book.
Was just really seeing how perfect this offering is. I don't know if this is exactly what you're pointing at, Deepa, but where I went when you said that was, I mean, one of the things that's challenging is something like a big milestone birthday comes up, and, you know, someone that's made a tremendous impact on your life, and so you're moved to offer something in gratitude for that to mark this occasion. And first of all, it's tricky with someone who doesn't want anything, as far as you can tell. So what do you get that person? But in the offering of this, it felt like what the gift is to be what we have received from the guide, essentially.
That's exactly where I went when you were saying that, Jen, that if that the best, that's a part of it, that what was being offered is this, when every Zen story ends with, in this way I deeply vow to train myself, it's that place I project that as someone that has offered these teachings for the Sangha to say, we are practicing and we will keep practicing.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. That each one of the vignettes in the little book that are, again, written by various folks in Sangha ends with that vow, essentially. Mm-hmm. In this way, I do most deeply vow to train myself.
Mm-hmm. So you had asked me about insights and awarenesses, and to me, I keep thinking of them as little Zen stories, and so there's so much to say about just where each of those stories took me. And as a practitioner that's relatively new to this practice, there's so much joy and you know, the sort of a curiosity, like a child eager to learn, you know, tell me again where I was born, you know, how that sort of that sort of way in which, oh, tell us again how Candelomba began, and oh, tell us again how, you know, Murphy's happened, all of that. So in that way, reading from Sangha who practiced for so long and have such a deep history felt really like somebody new being invited, and, you know, oh, let me tell you that story now again, since you've asked me for it. So that was one. I realized how much I longed for that and how much I enjoyed that part of those vignettes.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I love that, Deepa. It really gave me goosebumps because, I mean, first of all, part of how this particular book came about began as more with a history, looking at the history of practice and exactly what you're saying. Like, for so many of us, there's so much that came before in this very practice. I mean, let alone the thousands of years before, you know, any of us showed up. For many of us, how much was happening in Sangha? How much was put in place for us to show up in this very Sangha? And so to hear that, so make a long story short, we soon realized we had at least two projects on our hands. And the history project, actually, interestingly enough, is really launching this coming week. People will be getting an email about that. But that this piece of it felt like this is what we wanted to do for the celebration of 4/18/23, is to let these various nodes of intelligence, these various voices in Sangha, to express exactly what you're saying. So you do. It's so fun, isn't it? Because you get the history. You hear things about people being in Cantalomba, and you hear things about the very first Zen center that was bought, and you know, all these various concrete pieces of history through how people were practicing with all of that. Yeah.
And the other place was that very, very personal place, which is with each story recognizing one's own, having an awareness of where one's own ego is. So if there is a story about, and then so that, again, such a place of deep gratitude and compassion and awe of the courage of the people that wrote in. So in places like when a Sangha member would say, oh, I thought I terribly failed the guide and I was fearing a reproach, or I didn't know what to expect, or some wrongdoing in Cantalomba, or a project that, for which one's own ego is bristling because one wants to do research, but the guide says, well, let's wait and have life inform us, or, you know, let's see, let's have our own experience around it. And recognizing where my ego was going with that, it's that, that was a real palpable place of having an experience, like how we talk about Sangha extending our experience. You know, I have my experience, but then I get to have all of these other experiences because of that, of what is being shared, was really powerful. And from there to moments of tenderness, like the guide sitting vigil with a bird, or vigil with someone else who needed assistance, and then watching my ego voice coming in, oh, you could never do that, you would never. And then, oh, watching that, oh, okay, I see how this voice is pointing to my inadequacy and why this practice is so crucial for me. So every story in that way, when a voice that says, oh, no, or a voice of longing, that, oh, I wish I'd been on that trip in a CC, I would have loved to have walked with everyone and laughed and had guidance and prayed. And so it just, it was so personal, because it was so personal in a way that's universal, I guess it touched
intimate.
Me. Yeah, oh, that's exactly right. Yeah.
You know, Deepa, I'm overwhelmed because I just want to reflect absolutely everything about every facet you just said. Oh my gosh. But one of the things I love about listening to you, and it's one of my very favorite things about Sangha, and I think it's a big piece of what you're pointing at, which is that we go around in our lives, our whole lives are a workshop, we see all kinds of things, and then we see things in everyone else's experience. We see things when people call into the radio show. And these vignettes are an opportunity to do that, and that each person's own practice now informs everybody else's practice. And then you come on Good News, for example, and you're talking about it, and I'm seeing things in these vignettes that I've read that I hadn't seen before. I'm seeing new places, and it's taking me to, you know what, I'm going to sit down and read that book again. And so that's one of the things I love about this, the process of Sangha, is that passing around the Dharma in that way. It's amazing.
It truly is. It truly is, Jen. It beautifully reflected. And I'm not sure how much time, but I
we
just wanted to...
More than,
yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Because I just wanted to say, today when I read the book again, the quote that jumped out at me was about upset. The desire to deal with a problem does not have to be connected to feeling upset. So, and then why I bring that up is just that the quotes are so perfect. So I find myself when I read the story, the vignette, and then saying, what again, what was the quote that went, and then flipping back and reading, oh my gosh, this is a perfect quote for this story. And so just the immense thoughtfulness and the, I don't know, the wisdom in all of the pairings and the photographs of the guide, always so moving with the children or with the vignette about laughter. And just you can't help but have a smile on your face and in your heart when you see that photograph. So just that the thoughtfulness again of how all of this was so beautifully combined is another thing I really feel palpably than I wanted to share.
It's so lovely to hear, Deepa. And I will tell you that one of the things one discovers is, you know, we have these quotes and we regularly hear from Sherry Huber on the Peace Quotes, and it is the tip of the iceberg of the very quotes that are out there. And the quote problem, if there is one, is, wait, no, that one's the best.
Mm-hmm.
No, wait, that one's perfect. That's the best one. That might have to be another project at some point. I'm not sure, but, and I agree with you. I think the photographs are, the quotes, the photographs, the vignettes, it's all just, each one plays its own part. And to sit down and just get to spend time with it and have your own experience of it, it's a delight.
It truly has been, Jen, and continues to be. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much, Deepa. Thank you for being on tonight and talking about your experience of it and for all you've contributed. Much appreciated.
Oh, it's been a great joy and pleasure, Jen. Thank you.
Thank you. So happy.
So happy.
And Michael, we'll turn it back over to you and Sherry.
Wonderful. Thank you, Jen, and thank you, Deepa. And welcome back to Open Air. And Sherry, that was an extraordinary conversation. And,
it was.
I had the Kleenex out here, so it's...
Well, you know, we say it a lot, but we only say it because it's true. We have an extraordinary practice, and we have an extraordinary Sangha. So, I'm sure I've said this to you, and probably I've said it to everybody else, because most of the things I say I've said hundreds, if not thousands of times, but at one point, I was actually at a book fair. I don't know which of our books we were blogging, as they say. But there was a fellow from another Zen center, and he was, you know, talking to me about practice and how we practice and that sort of thing. And I was telling him about the privileged environment and that sort of thing. And he said, that's interesting. That I think that the Sangha that you are with will be small and mature. And it's true. That's what we have. We have a relative, in, you know, I mean, there are a lot of people in our Sangha, but in the big picture, it's a small group of people that very devoted and sincere and hard working and deep looking, and it's a delight to go through life with such a group of people. It is
a delight. It's extraordinary, and to
mm-hmm.
have the skills that are offered to us, you know, that I've taken on and learned mm-hmm. and practiced, you mm-hmm. feel like my life has been saved, you know, many
yeah.
times.
Yeah. Yeah. Practice. Yeah. Yes. And that's the wonderful part, isn't it? It's a practice of tools, right? So if somebody wants to save their life and they want to go from suffering to a life of freedom and peace and joy and gratitude, it's absolutely possible to do, which, of course, is what the Buddha taught. You know, it didn't start with us, but but to be able to do that for oneself within such a supportive, kind, compassionate sangha, it's the best. Just the best. As Tina Turner, those of us who adored Tina Turner, hard to say goodbye to her, and because she was simply the best, and this is simply the best. I don't know if you know her music enough to know, but
yeah.
Simply the Best was one of her good ones. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Fabulous. And we have another caller here, Sherry.
All right.
Next caller. You are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Laura. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, hello, Laura.
Hi. I was going to actually call in tonight and talk about depression. So that first call was extremely helpful. Thank you for that.
Oh, good.
You know, I have always had, I was depressed when I was younger, when my kids were young, and I have always had this unconscious resistance to being depressed, which I think is based on beliefs and assumptions about only weak people are depressed and you can't be depressed and you have to talk, you know, all of that old mm-hmm. stuff.
The right people are certainly not depressed.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, the good right people. And mm-hmm. and because I suffered with it for so long, it was like, okay, I'm out of it. I'm never going back.
Mm-hmm.
Until recently, when I'm going through some difficult life experience here and just feeling that incredible low energy. And today, a little miracle happened, and I just wanted to share that with you.
Mm.
I was listening to an interview with a psychiatrist in Zimbabwe, and he has, so just a little background, in Africa as a whole and Zimbabwe in specific, there is one psychiatrist for every 1.5 million people.
I can believe that. Yeah.
So he decided, you know, something has to be done here because people's mental health is really suffering and there are no resources. Mm-hmm. So what occurred to him was to work with grandmothers, and he calls it friendship benches, where grandmothers will just sit and be with people who need someone to listen to them and facilitate them. And so the grandmothers are trained. But what was interesting to me, besides the fact that this, you know, this is over the years has spread very, very far and wide and has been extremely successful. There's like 50 peer-reviewed articles out on the efficacy of it and long-term results. When he first wanted to get in touch with the grandmothers, they would have nothing to do with him because he came as a doctor. And finally, this one grandmother said to him, "You have to stop talking like a doctor. No one is going to listen to you." And so he learned their language. And they don't talk about depression I mean, he spoke the language, the local language, but there's no word for depression in that language. And when he describes it to the grandmothers, what they said is, oh, that comes from thinking too much. And I just went, of course it's the stories.
Yes. Wow. Wow. Yeah, you're not here. You're not here where you are. You're thinking.
Yeah. And for me, it's off in the future and anxiety and fear and all of those, you know.
Wow.
Not always, but occasionally it blindsides me. And today was one of those days.
And so blindsided, it kind of, as we were talking about earlier, it's just suddenly, boom, hit with, and buy into it before you really realize that anything's happening to you.
Yes. All of a sudden, I am in the midst of it, and it's like I'm drowning.
And so then what?
Well, so then, of course, I pick up the recorder, and the mentor, you know, reminds me to drop the stories, but in a way that is so gentle and kind. There's no judgment. It's just, you know, she's here to listen to whatever feelings I'm feeling, to, you know, whatever it is. And she just reassures me that 24/7, and I can just take as much time as I want, and what, you know, it's like there is this container of acceptance that changes. Well, I just want to say everything, because then I can look at it without without the judgment, and without the judgment.
Yeah, you're not the wrong person for having this experience, and it is an experience. It is a thing that happens, right? And you know what the thing is that happens, and periodically it happens. For a long time, you didn't know that it was a thing that happens, and so you were mired in it. And through that process, you came to realize that it is a thing that happens, that it's not personal, it doesn't actually have anything to do with you. And then in realizing that, of course, knowing that you have tools, right, choices about it, then you can shift the attention, not in an escaping kind of way, but in a, you know, in a grandmother way. Just stop thinking about it. Get to where you are. Be with the person you are right now in this moment, in this situation, and you're fine.
And I don't have to try and, quote, talk myself out of it. Because that, again, makes me
tell yourself another
person
story.
For having the experience. Right, exactly. So I am so grateful for all the tools of practice.
Oh gosh, me too. And for the wise people who, like grandmothers and others, who know that all of our problems are a result of thinking. All of them. All suffering is a result of thinking. And of course, you know, the thinking people just pshaw, right?
Yeah.
That's ridiculous. and that's okay, because the fact that thinking is God in the Western world, and in Western world traumatized nations such as most of the ones in Africa, the fact that those beliefs are very strong doesn't make them true.
So profound. Thank you, Sherry.
It really is. Thank you. And thank you for that. That's such a
I was fortunate enough to spend a little time in Zimbabwe, and when I was there many, many years ago, the situation was deplorable. The lives of those people were just beyond unimaginable. And though these many decades later, I don't think much has improved for them.
Mm-hmm.
And yet
mm-hmm.
to know that there's still that level of wisdom and compassion guiding their lives, that's that's heartening.
Yeah.
And, Laura, that it's a funny, I don't know if I can even put this together, but that's where we all need to head, right? Because those of us who get fooled into believing that stuff can protect us, that circumstances can protect us, it's a difficult, difficult, doesn't even come close, a grisly process for most people to get from that belief to the well-being that comes from being able to be with life as life is, whatever those circumstances are.
Mm-hmm.
And yet,
yeah.
I would say that those grandmothers are probably happier than an awful lot of people who have an awful lot of stuff.
Yeah, 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 because to me, that's attached to the illusion of control.
Mm-hmm.
It's like another layer on top.
Yeah. If things were only, then I would.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just no truth to it.
Not true. Not true in my experience.
Yeah.
Mm.
All right. Well, take good care of yourself.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us, Laura. And Sherry, we are 3 minutes to the hour here. Shall we wrap it up, or would you like
I
to
think
talk?
So, Michael. I think so. I would hate to, short anybody from their time. And those grandmothers seem like an awfully nice place to end on.
They do.
Yeah.
They do.
They do.
So
yeah.
Big thank
so
you.
So thank you.
To Sherry. Yes, thank you. And
yeah.
Thank you to everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And go happy.
Good night.
All right, good night.